baby you, oh baby me, so small, so happy, is mommy being good, do you feel loved, something scary is coming, don't worry, I'm here.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And I'm Aaron.
And this is the Legion Podcast episode 22. Let's just jump right in this week. It's our top three highlights for season 3, episode 3, chapter 22. What'd you guys think in general? Rima, what'd you think?
I really liked it. I thought there were some really great moments, some great cinematography, great use of music. And I liked it, but it left me with a little bit of a sad feeling. I was sad, not in a terrible way, but in a, you know, just kind of a melancholy kind of a way. But mm-hmm. I thought it was, you know, interesting to kind of go back and see some roots that we've kind of been waiting for, you know, for some time, to see David's parents and their story.
Get some of it fleshed out, yeah.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed this one. I liked it.
Yeah, that sadness, we might have to get used to that. Although I'm sort of wondering mm-hmm. if they're hinting that there's a possibility there could be some kind of a redemptive or happier ending. I don't know. After a sexual assault, you'd have to do a really deft job of bringing it around to that to make mm-hmm. everybody happy with it. But anyway, Aaron, what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was excellent. I was surprised that they took a whole hour to kind of take a detour and blow up this one small part of the plot, you know, David going back in time to try to fix his past. And I also like, I forgot that, you know, Disney essentially owns everything now and there's no rights problems, because I remember it being an issue about, you know, there were some clear lines about what Legion could and could not tread on. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised to see, like, it kind of shocked me to see, like, you know, Charles named and putting a Cerebro hat on and all that. Like, I thought it was surprising, but I thought it was really good. And the way they told it, like, kind of fractured and out of time, fits both the kind of fractured mentality and emotional space that the show takes, and also the fact that they're literally fracturing time in this season as well.
Yeah. And I think too, Gabrielle was the point of view character for a lot of the episode, and she's probably the most mentally unstable, or at least she seemed pretty mentally unstable to me. So it kind of fit in with that. Like, she wasn't even sure what was real and when and where she was. But as far as like the rights, I'm a little confused on all that. I mean, X-Men has been a Fox property. And, you know, before this whole Disney merger, we wondered if Legion was supposed to fit into the X-Men universe and if they would try to get Patrick Stewart to do a pro bono appearance or something, you know, or James McAvoy, or however you say his name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I get the feeling, I don't know if this whole season was planned after the merger with Disney, but, you know, it seems like Disney's just going to ignore all the X-Men movies that have come out before and probably just restart everything. So maybe that gave Noah Hawley license to just be like, well, I don't need to adhere to any continuity. I can just do whatever I want.
Yeah, I read an article, I think it was Den of Geek, that asserted that that's essentially what happened, that Fox was kind of like, hey, we're not going to bring Patrick Stewart or Charles McAvoy on here, and we don't want another actor portraying it and muddying this waters, and we've still got to bring this, you know, like, they had a story they wanted to tell with the X-Men, mm-hmm. and they didn't want this to interfere with it, and then that essentially the merger and acquisitions made that to where, you know, obviously Fox kind of brought their X-Men series to a close this summer with Dark Phoenix, which, you know, I had mixed feelings about, but like that kind of paved the way for Noah Hawley to be a little bit more bolder about, you know, taking specific parts of the canon and not being so restricted to just play in its teeny tiny little Legion space. So yeah. I thought, yeah, mm-hmm.
whoever, it's all for the best. You know, I would say,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got complicated feelings about the mouse owning the whole planet, but if it can, like, grease the skids of some comic books here and there, then I guess, It's not the worst thing.
Right. I mean, this could also be seen as like the last gasp of creativity before we get the new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It could. It could be.
We'll see. Rima, what's your number three?
Well, my number three, I'm going to start off with just how I liked how this episode kind of explored, and we're all three parents, so I feel like we can probably all relate to that in some way, and most parents probably can, about how, you know, how you worry about your kids and the things that you do or say, your actions might shape your children. And, you know, you see Gabrielle, you see Xavier, you know, standing over the crib and looking down on young David, and, you know, they're expressing their concerns about David turning out like Xavier, and Gabrielle worries that he might be like her, and it feels like that they're trying to do their best to kind of imprint on David all of their best qualities that they want him to have. Even Farouk, in his own weird way, does it when he finally takes his consciousness and goes into David, baby David. We see him like rocking baby David on his knee, and he calls him his, you know, my sweet boy. The adult David talks to his baby self, kind of offering his protection, and, you know, that he'll watch over him. So I think that it was just kind of interesting to see how we see it here. It's, of course, a little bit different because you're talking superheroes and powers and things like that. But to kind of see that come down to be like a very normal thing, how all parents kind of worry about how their children will turn out and like their own weird eccentricities, or if they are dealing with maybe a mental illness that they're worried about passing on or something like that, and worried about how their kids are going to turn out. And truthfully, it looks like he kind of ends up like both of them. He inherits power.
Charles
like his dad.
Is worried he'll pass on the telepathy, and Gabrielle's worried she'll pass on her mental instability. And I'm like, oops.
Surprise, double inheritance.
He got both. So yeah, he got some tragedy from his mom. He's got the power like his dad, but he lacks that, I think, that mental strength that Xavier was able to like ground himself a little bit.
And then part of that might be Shadow King's fault, destabilizing him his whole life.
True, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
So I liked all of that.
When Shadow King said, I think he said, "You're beautiful, my beautiful boy," or something like that, just like the mom was saying. I just interpreted that as beautiful, like, because you're going to give me all this power. More of a narcissistic kind of a thing. But I don't know. It's interesting because it seems like Farouk has sort of suggested a couple of times that he was a fatherly figure for David.
I was trying to remember if it was last season's finale where he had that speech about, you know, I was there from the beginning, bouncing you on my knee and cradling you. And I think, like, I think those positions aren't inconsistent. Like, there are definitely narcissistic parents out there. And I think that this episode just goes further to show that, like, that's not all him lying about the paternal relationship he sees him having with David, but he's just a very evil person. He's an evil parent. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yep.
I also like that, you know, where Gabrielle was wondering, when will you learn this world is an ugly place, which is interesting because I think there's two lessons that a child needs to learn to become an adult. One, that yes, the world is ugly and cruel, but you can't, that's not the final lesson. The other final lesson is the world, despite all that, is also, you know, beautiful and full of light and hope and love, and your individual decisions impact that. So I think it's interesting to see, you know, Charles was so absent from the early goings of, you know, David's, you know, life because he was off chasing this Farouk guy. And then Farouk moves in and he's got his kind of, you start to see like all the little pieces that kind of went into David's life. And also I love the flashbacks to things we saw in season one, like, you know, teenage David destroying a cop car and him freaking out in the kitchen.
Juxtaposed with her saying, you know, what will you be? What will you do? Like a mother's hope. And it makes you think about your own kids, right? Like, oh my God, what cop cars will they be exploding? Hopefully not.
Yeah, let's face it, the number's not going to be zero, Jason.
Out of the three of us, chances are good. Okay, Aaron, what's your number three?
I really enjoyed seeing actors that I've only seen play really weird assholes before play compelling characters.
I know.
And I'm talking about Stephanie Corneliusson, who is most famous as Joanna Wellick, which, say what you will, is a very bizarre, at the least, character for Mr. Robot. And then Harry Lloyd, who, of course, is Viserys, the short-lived brother of one Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones. And I remember, because, you know, we cover Mr. Robot, and I remember saying that, like, I like a lot of what she's doing. I just think this material is kind of weird and the character's kind of weird, and I'd love to see what she can do with, like, decent material. And I thought this was my answer. Like, she was fantastic. I mean, it goes without saying that these are both very attractive people. But, you know, seeing them play non-weird asshole characters, like, you know, Harry Lloyd effortlessly kind of stepped into that heroic nobility of Charles Xavier. And I thought Stephanie was very compelling as this kind of, you know, wounded person from the war mentally. And it set up such so many nice parallels for, you know, like, what is the difference between Charles mentally messing with Gabrielle to help her over her war trauma and David mentally messing with Sid to get her over possible manipulation of the Shadow King? It's, I'm not saying they're the same, obviously, and then what follows is a whole different conversation too.
Yeah.
But you can kind of see where that was a point where he was kind of like his father, and he was a little too, and it went wrong. But he didn't have the experience of, like, being in the trenches and telling people to kill themselves and seeing how bad this could be to kind of to draw, I guess, you know, strength from.
Right. But, you know, I keep wanting to call him Professor X. It seems like Charles is more appropriate from what we saw. Anyway, I'll call him Charles. So he says to Gabrielle, you know, I like how she kind of called him on it. She just said, you know, about the whole apple tomato thing, did you see that when you were in my mind? And that was the first that it had been acknowledged. And she wasn't, that's just good writing where that's how you bring it up, you know. And then he takes that as an impetus to explain himself, and he says, I don't pry when I'm in there, I try to help. And the way he says it, his way of being, it seems really comforting and sincere, and you're like, okay. But yeah, like, what do you mean you don't pry? I mean, we heard war noises in there, so he learned something about her past. That's prying. What is prying if not going in someone's mind and learning something about, like, their deepest, darkest moments in life? And he just says, I just try to help. So it did feel to me like, yeah, he kind of has that rationalization like David has.
And you gotta trust him, because, like, you know, we see, just, none of us are telepaths, or if they are, please write us in, because we'd like to hear your story. Right. But none of us are
just
telepaths.
Projected,
but when,
into our minds, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. What's with this email stuff? Get on Cerebro. Yeah.
Right,
but you know,
permission.
We see in real life when you try to help people, the difference between, like, you can offer the same kind of friendly, gentle, supportive help to three different people, and one person will grab onto it like a life preserver, one person will just be like, hey, thanks for the help, and the other person be like, mind your fucking business. So, like, one person's I'm not prying, I'm just helping, the other person's, like, deeply prying into their personal. So, and the fact that you know, obviously Charles is the sole arbiter of the correctness of that decision, because he's doing it and he's the only mutant. And it is interesting. I think it's intentional that you're supposed to, like, draw parallels between that and what David did.
Yeah. And even, I mean, with David, you know, the way everything's ended up, I go back and question how much was he mentally pushing Sid to fall for him, even maybe unconsciously. And we can see in this episode that Charles Xavier just can snap his fingers and all of a sudden they're heroes and they're leaving the mental hospital and to applause. And so it's like, well, I hope that he has really fine control over his powers and he's completely aware of what he's doing. And he's not just sort of subconsciously pushing things in his direction with her. You know, I don't think he is, but it's a question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you seen season one of Jessica Jones on Netflix?
Yeah.
So, like, that's always been interesting about Charles, is that there's not any difference between him and David Tennant's kind of Purple Man.
Did you see that, Rima?
No.
You gotta watch it.
Without spoiling, the arch villain of season one is a man who can make make you do whatever you want. He's got, like, super hypnotism.
Mm-hmm.
and he uses it to abuse people. But there's really no difference between him and Charles other than their basic moral framework, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Charles can be a terrifying person, and some of the best X-Men stories touch on the edge of like what Charles could do if he just was uncorked mm-hmm. and right. properly motivated. So I all these kind of like, you know, moral ambiguities and analysis and meditations are some of the things I like about Legion, and this was a great episode for it.
Right, totally. Okay, absolutely. Well, I'll go into my number three, which is Gabrielle and Charles' relationship and parallels to Sid and David. In the comics, see, I was surprised to see Professor X as a patient in a mental hospital, and that's one area where Howley just, with his new freedom to not adhere to continuity, went against it, I think, because in Wikipedia it says Charles Xavier met Gabrielle Haller while he was working in an Israeli psychiatric facility where she was one of his patients. Xavier was secretly using his psychic powers to ease the pain of Holocaust survivors institutionalized there. The two had an affair that resulted in the birth of their son, David. Xavier was initially unaware of this, as Gabrielle never told him she was pregnant. So when I read that, I was like, oh, was he actually working there and just disguising himself as a patient? But no, he was a patient. And I think that, you know, with his PTSD, he probably, it seemed like he admitted himself and he was there willingly and he wanted help. But then when he decided he felt good and it was time to leave, he just left. And that whole thing, yeah, it was very much a parallel to David meeting Sid, right down to them playing Rolling Stones' She's Like a Rainbow.
Yeah. Love that.
That was from Legion Season 1. And mm-hmm. And it was sweet. I mean, as much as I've been sort of questioning whether it's all above board, I think this show really knows how to do romance well. And Charles spotting her in her chair and immediately perks up and he's attracted and goes over and tries to help her. And I liked when she finally did wake up. It seemed to me like she had been aware that whole time, but just still, and that she actually had come to know him and already trust him. And she said she likes Odd, which was super cute. And then the whole drawing her the tomato apple and playing chess and sharing cherry pie, which is another callback to Sid and David.
Season 1.
Yeah. And just quickly, they can make you believe that this couple fell in love before you know it. They're dancing and kissing and everything. And then she tells him about her dream of living together far away. And he's like, all right, let's do that. Which was really fun. Like, I really liked that whole thing. It kind of, you know, was light and happy and fun. And I was moved also by David being there in later scenes going, oh, wow, this is how they met in a mental hospital. I guess it just runs in the family. But he was kind of, you know, just in awe of the whole thing, I guess. And I like that too, because even though he's on a mission, he's still affected as anyone would be. Like, wow, I'm watching my parents meet. And then one other parallel is I noticed is when Charles finds Farouk and goes off to, or he learns about Farouk and then goes off to find him, and Gabrielle really doesn't want him to leave. And that reminded me of Sid not wanting David to leave. And he gives her that David compass later on. So I just like that mm-hmm. they chose to do this as a parallel with David in a lot of different ways.
Agreed.
Okay, Bhima.
Well, my number two is actually pretty much all of your points that you just made in your number three. That was how David and Sid's life mirrored his parents, their story through meeting in the mental hospital, their David's shared love of cherry pie. There was one thing that I'll comment that I didn't hear you bring up was Gabrielle says the same thing to Charles that Sid says to David in season two, when the time comes, prove me wrong.
Oh yeah. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. I thought, cause I love that line so much. I loved it in season two when Sid said it. And then when Gabrielle says it again to Charles in this episode, it was just another great callback. And I think definitely appropriate for the moment, but I think you covered all of my same points, so I won't repeat any of that, but I loved all of that. And it was just fun to see that story kind of retold and how history kind of repeats itself. Mm-hmm. So super fun.
One part we don't know is the end of the story, because where it ended with Well, with Sid and David, it's in a horrible place where she's like killing him multiple times. So they have to go back in time and erase it. That's pretty bad. And with Charles and Gabrielle, the last thing we saw was her fainting because she saw adult David and it freaked her out. Mommy! And then and then Professor X was trying to wake her up and you could see him put his fingers to his temple and try to use his telepathy and he couldn't even do it that way. And he's very powerful. So it made me wonder if she's just comatose now.
I feel like she slipped back into her catatonia that she was in before, mm-hmm. Before she came out of it, or whether she was aware and came out of it on her own, or whether Charles, because I'm not sure I'm super clear on that, if he helped her come out of that, or if she became aware of her own, but I think that she slipped right back in, and maybe she's unreachable at this point due to the trauma that she suffered while he was gone.
She may have stayed that way for her whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope we find out. I want to see, you know, more of that story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that leads me, because if she's in a coma, what happens to David? You know, does Charles, mm-hmm. are we left at the uncomfortable? Because in the comics, as you said, Gabrielle doesn't really tell him, but he knows he's a father. So does he just abandon David? There's a lot of those questions echoing around right. in David's own head. Like when he's watching them together, it's like, you know, why did you guys get rid of me? Did you not love me? Like what?
What was wrong with me? That was heartbreaking. What was wrong when he with said me? That. Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, back in chalkboard scene in season mm-hmm. one,
right?
He had the story kind of wrong, and one of the things he thought was that they gave that Professor X battled the Shadow King, and the Shadow King's spirit or essence became disembodied, and then they were afraid that Shadow King would find David, so they hid him away with somebody else. Well, we see here that they haven't even, he's not adopted or anything. The Shadow King already entered him while he's still under the care of Professor X and Gabrielle. So we don't know how he leaves Professor X.
Yeah. I think that's literally true, though. Like when Professor X comes back to Gabrielle, he has just defeated the Shadow King, is what I'm guessing.
I think so too. Yeah.
And exiled his mind from his body. And that's why.
Right.
And I think the surprise is that the Shadow King was able to come that quick.
Yeah.
Right, because he can travel on the astral plane, and Charles has to, like, take a physical plane to get home. Yeah.
So imagine, like, the end of Star Wars where Obi-Wan's, like, you know, hiding Luke on Tatooine, but Luke's already possessed with the dark side, you know? It's one of those things where it's like, I could see this literally taking place. And the other thing is, which is going to lead to my next point, mm-hmm. if we're ready mm-hmm. to go there,
yep.
or yes, absolutely.
Is this whole concept of time travel. Every time it comes up, it can get messy. But there is an implication that perhaps David himself caused the Shadow King to enter him and become Legion.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And that's how it always was, because he was always there, kind of thing.
Yes.
Or like if maybe he's already altered the timeline, that like maybe this was a kind of cat and mouse game that was played for another year or so, and before so it's like it's not clear to me whether he himself has affected the timeline just mm-hmm. by trying to mess around with it.
See,
if I'm guessing, I would say yes.
Well, here's the thing is when he says mommy and she faints, then they seem pretty distracted, Charles and Gabrielle's catatonic, and he's trying to wake her up, and he says I got rid of the thing, so he's more focused on having gotten rid of David than and doesn't seem to sense the Shadow King, and the Shadow King mm-hmm. seems to take advantage of the chaos of that situation and enter David, baby David.
No, but I think Charles thinks David is the Shadow King. Yeah,
okay, but my point is that there's this big black cloud above their
heads.
Oh,
for sure.
Right.
He's like, I don't know. I think he's gone. but what one thing that sort of throws me is we saw earlier before Charles got home and mom was watching TV and David's like, cry louder. And then he put a shield over the baby. And so the smoke couldn't get in for a second, which gave her mm-hmm. enough time to get over there. So mm-hmm. it seems to me like if he wasn't there for that, then it would have entered the baby then.
Yes, it does. And then it's an interesting conversation because there's a lot of interpretive stuff you got to do in this episode.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of like half-heard conversations between Switch and David where she's like, just use your powers. And he's like, can I use my powers? And obviously he can, but you're right. He might have, but I who knows how much, like, whether, because he's trying to contact Gabrielle, his mom, his mommy, throughout the episode. And, like, that could be harming her mental health to where she has these kind of lapses that would leave David to be possessed.
Because it's like the neighbors are playing disco and she just can't get any peace and quiet.
Right. Like, you know, like a mom, like maybe the television shuts off and a mom that's got full rest and isn't being manipulated through both time, space, and her mental, the astral plane.
Yeah.
Maybe she's just like, oh, the TV went out, whoop-de-doo. But freaked out, Gabrielle has to, you know, get up and investigate and turn her back and do all these other things. And it's no telling with time travel. I don't know.
I think we're supposed to, and we are supposed to be wondering if David influenced it so that it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think if we're not sure, then David Howley is happy. Is that his name? Did I say it right, Rima?
David Holler?
Are you talking about Noah Holley or David Holley?
Noah. Oh, yes.
Noah. If we're not sure, see, I'm just mentally incapacitated. But if Noah Holley, if we're not sure, but we're asking the questions, I feel like that's when he's happiest.
Oh, definitely.
He doesn't want us to know for sure anything.
Right.
I think he eats that shit up.
Exactly. Okay, where are we? My turn, right? Are you done with your second point?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mine is just, I love getting this new perspective on David's history with Farouk. We've talked about some of it, but I went back and watched that whole chalkboard scene to see how much of it was right and how much was wrong. And for one thing, Professor X has a full head of hair, but maybe his astral self is bald, or maybe it was just a sort of metaphorical representation of him, and really what it was is so that we would all know who it was without them having to say the name. But that was interesting. And then David surmised that Professor X and Shadow King fought before he was even born, but in this we see that he was already born. We see him in his basement with this like Cerebro prototype, and I liked how it sounded like he was tuning a radio, and as he would turn his head, he could hear probably people's thoughts from whatever direction he was pointing in. That we learn that's how he found Farouk, and he's in Morocco at the head of this. It looked like a big banquet table, and he was at the head. Is that what you guys got?
That's what I got. Yeah,
and eating and drinking his fill.
He had like
fill.
His followers and yeah, whatever.
And you know, he sees Professor X sees him as the old yellow-eyed fat bastard for a second. And I kind of question that because I got the impression the reason why he got so fat inside David is he was like a tick feeding off of his psyche. But then again, maybe he's gorging himself in Morocco too. He's always like a parasite or gluttonous person taking and taking. And I liked when Charles told Gabrielle, I found someone like me, I'm not alone. So that tells us that he probably hasn't been in contact with any other mutants or at least any telepaths. And it also tells us that the reason why he came into contact with Farouk is that he wanted to connect with somebody like him. And then he goes there, and I love that phone call where he's like, I made a mistake coming here. He's got no morals. He's a monster. Mm-hmm. And we presume that he fought him on their first meeting and won. And like we said, because he was an astral form, he could get back there before Charles could get back. And then when he does come back, and he's like this, like the smoke monster on Lost, like a plume of smoke. And it mirrored what was on the chalkboard, because when Professor X beat him, you could see his essence floated off like smoke. And then she starts going nuts because she senses David's presence, and also Shadow King. She says there's a light and there's a dark. And she kind of freaked out at the end there where she couldn't find the door to her room because there was no door. And then she kept turning baby David around, and you could just see the back of his head.
Oh, God, that was nightmare fuel.
Yes.
And then she said, stop it. And it looked like a demon coming out of her. And so all of that, I'm not really sure what to make of it, if it was just her own mental illness, or was it the Shadow King fucking with her? Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
I think you're supposed to be answer, because that's like the big question with David. Like, where does the mental illness and trauma end, and where does the Shadow King's influence begin, and how much of things that David are doing are legitimately David things, and how many of it? And I think you're, I mean, I think because when she's writing the letter, dictating this letter to Charles, she talks about how she's starting to lose touch with the reality and how she sees shadows and don't stay in the same place. I think she's, this is an allusion to seeing the shadow, like the Shadow King has been looking for his moment. Like, you know, it's like, and I don't, the other thing is like, I don't know how much of this stuff is literally true too, because, you know, obviously this is fucking Legion, but, cause I, it was not clear to me why a powerful telepath banished you to astral plane would need the mom to like look away for 30 seconds to take possession of the baby. But that's one of the rules, I guess, that the show kind of stuck to, that they, that the Shadow King needed a moment. Like, I would understand if that Charles was there, right? You know, because you essentially got a bodyguard, but Gabrielle would be helpless to anything that he would do.
Maybe he just didn't want anyone to know. You know, so that she, if she saw that, she would tell Charles, hey, this
and then he could
plume
then
of smoke went into our baby.
Right, yeah, like something took our kid and he could somehow still try to fight him out or whatever, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I could see how it would appeal to the Shadow King in like a sick way to be like, oh, I'm going to be the cuckoo that's going to lay my egg in another man's nest, and I'm going to trick him into taking care of this, and then when the time is right, I'm going to take control. I mean, it definitely tracks with what we know of the way he enjoys playing with people and inhabiting their bodies and making them do things
dominating
at cross purposes. Yes,
manipulating and all that. And the last part of the chalkboard thing was that he thought Shadow King possessed him for revenge against Professor X, and also that, you know, to make himself stronger, to siphon off David's power. So if that's true, then at least one of Farouk's goals still is to get revenge on Professor X. All right. Rima, number one.
Well, we've definitely touched on it quite a bit. And I was kind of toying around with it, mostly just a lot of questions. Like, did David drive his mother crazy? She's alone, she's hearing things, she can hear David, or at least sort of hear David, she can hear something. She talks about there's a presence, like a light that watches over her at night, and then there's a like a dark shadow during the other times. And I think that we're supposed to probably assume that the light means David and the dark means the Shadow King. I wonder if it's the opposite, just because we, I mean, I don't know, I think there's some ambiguity there on good and bad, and how you can interpret that. And then also the question, you know, did David, through his actions with all this time travel, allow Farouk to take over? We heard Switch say before, I think it was in the first episode maybe, or maybe in the second, about how, you know, dangerous it could be to go too far back. And we're being taught through all of these time travel lessons how it can be more and more unstable to go back so far. And if, you know, he's opened something up, and that's maybe that's why his powers were maybe a little bit more muted. That's maybe why his mother couldn't hear him, you know, like we thought, and he wasn't able to come through as much. And I'm thinking, what in the world are they kind of messing with, kind of going back that far? And then again, did David's presence help drive, you know, Gabrielle, what little stability and peace that she found, you know, in Charles being gone? She was kind of losing that little by little. And when she was reading that book, Harold and the Purple Crayon, that story that she was reading David at night, when she talks about the son being bound to his own world, and that through the very means by which he had hoped to change his fate. And it seems like David, he may have unwittingly kind of brought around this very version that he was hoping to change.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've already mentioned that by, you know, commenting on the self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think we've talked about that before, too, like with Sid, too, with future Sid and and everything that, you know, with that you know, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Just making David kind of into an adversary.
Exactly. And I think we're kind of seeing that kind of same thing here, that like no matter what, I feel I had so many Lost vibes. Am I the only one that got any Lost vibes off of this episode? Where
because it's
we had
a flashback kind of, or what?
Well, there was the smoke line, monster. We have to go back. David was telling Switch, we have to go back. We have to go. Yeah, I think that, because Fruit kind of was coming across as like a smoke monster. We had the, we have to go back. We have to go back over and over again. And then just the whole theme of like, whatever happened, happened. We can't change anything.
Oh, yeah,
anything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
right.
Like
plus,
the whole thing.
I also seeing a character who you traditionally think of as being in a wheelchair walking around.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Right.
To your point, I remember kind of almost gasping when I realized what was going on, that they had, because, you know, we had seen that Switch had balked on going even 4 hours back in time, because she's like, mm-hmm. oh, man, this is
right.
a lot.
And what happened to that demon that was supposed to be in the hallway? I feel like that's a bit of a dropped plot thread there.
No, I think
we're gonna see that though.
Absolutely.
I think that's to come.
I'm only scoring a drop plot point if we get to the finale episode and they haven't addressed it. But I think the demon, like, because it's like, I'm not sure if it's like a literal literal demonic force, although with the glowing eyes, it seems like it might, or if it's like a metaphor, or it could be both. Like, it's metaphor. Hey, we're going to see, like, going back too far in time and rupturing the time is like a demon that can consume you. But we also know that Division 3, that's kind of sort of being led by the Shadow King, is trying to head this time game off at the pass. I wonder if we're actually, when we saw in episode 1, those yellow eyes, that's not literally the Shadow King who from another timeline is already there waiting to pounce.
I mean, I also sort of wonder if the Shadow King is bouncing around in time himself, because we saw a flash of the yellow-eyed fat bastard dude even when Charles was in the mental hospital before all this even went down, which made me wonder, or if, you know, the Shadow King has some kind of an inkling of what's happening all throughout time.
Could be.
Yep.
Okay, where are we?
That was my number one. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to put the kill yourself scene. I know we've kind of talked obliquely around it, but I thought that was amazing and chilling, and the way they showed kind of like the impact of Charles himself when it happens. It reminded me a lot of like the Saving Private Ryan scene where the Nazi with the knife is wrestling with the American officer, but this time the Allied officer has mind powers and can just have the guy kill himself. And how it's interesting to think of Charles as a real character. Is like, how in the world does someone have that much power and not let it corrupt them?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Charles, like, characters like Charles Xavier is right up there with Superman, in my opinion, that they must have the temperament of Christ or Buddha or whoever, just to not let that, like, just imagine all the tiny annoyances, or the times you've been enraged, or the times that you've been puffed up and gotten like a head of steam about justice for this or that, and then you realize you were wrong when you've given it a second thought. And Charles just essentially has to live his life like, you know, with those being real. Like, he could snap his fingers and make the world exactly the way he envisions it if he wanted to. And he doesn't. And I think that's an interesting and cool aspect of his character. But you also see in David how, or like I said, the purple man in the case of the Jessica Jones villain, how, you know, that was the story of him, is that you know, he it's not like he set out to be an evil person. It's just like, man, life is so much easier when you can just like make every yes turn or every no turn into a yes, and every maybe be in a like absolutely. And it's the kind of with great power comes a great responsibility, or absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, for whatever weird reason, Charles is nigh incorruptible.
And I mean, a really dangerous way to get to the place where you're just totally out of bounds with your power, or David, is he is a cult leader. And so he has this ideology that everything he's doing ultimately is for the greater good. And so when he tells Lenny, "You're hungry, go eat, get out of my face," he can say, "Oh, this is all for the greater good because of all this love that I'm going to bring to the world," and just little by little keep, you know, doing things like that until it's just totally out of hand. And even in the comics later on, Professor X, stories with Professor X explore where he maybe stepped out of bounds and is at odds with other people because of...
Did you ever... Because you're probably reading comics about the same time I was. Did you ever get into the What If comic series?
Yeah, Jason? Sometimes. I usually would read them if I was interested in that particular story.
Okay, did you see the one where, like, what if Charles Xavier became the Juggernaut?
I might have. It's been a long time.
Oh, man, that was a trip where it's like essentially him and his brother Kane got switched places. So not only did he have fanatic... Not only because he was imprisoned underground with the Juggernaut, you know, crystal, and he was like, as the story's like, he was tunneling from miles underground with his bare hands, but he can mentally stay aware of like all the things were happening to mutant kind in his absence and how bad things were getting. And when he finally emerged on the surface, he had the full power of the Juggernaut plus his powers of Xavier, and he turned into a terrifying godlike character that just essentially ruled the earth with an iron fist and all, like, was a mutant supremacist to make Magneto blush. Like, that's like when you find like, yeah, it's great. It's I like that stuff too when they get and explore the darker sides of what Xavier. As you can tell, I've been spending half the podcast meditating on, like, how terrifying a telepath that strong can be.
And what the writers took advantage of one thing about those What If books is, well, it's not we don't have to keep anyone alive or have them keep to their morals, so it's can be super dark and tragic and.
And then it'll be undone the next week, because this is just an alternate. This is a timeline that could have happened but didn't.
Yeah. What if Spider-Man was a porn star? Go. Okay. My number one is Nature or Nurture, and I liked that the doctor in the mental hospital questioning Charles had this Heidegger quote: "Every man is born as many men and dies as a single one." Does that mean anything to you? And to me, that was about possibility when you're starting out, or actually when you're at any point in your life before your death, that there's many paths that can be taken. And it also kind of brings back that multiple timeline episode that we saw last season. But it's echoed throughout this episode. Gabrielle saying, "David, my beautiful boy, who will you become? What will you do?" is just sort of acknowledging that there's so many possibilities. And then later on, when Gabrielle's talking to Charles and she says, "I've seen blood on fire," talking about, you know, I'm fucked up, man, because of all this stuff. And Charles is saying, "We can change." She goes, "People don't change." He goes, "I don't believe that." And she says, "Sweet, and prove me wrong," which I thought that was a really nice moment. But it's echoing the same thing. It's about whether or not David, at least the backdrop of us wondering how David's going to end up is always there. So this whole question in the context of that is about, is it possible at this point for him to still become a good person? At least that's what it is for me. And, you know, now that we know that his mother and father were in a mental institution, and I think sometimes mental illness can be hereditary, right?
Sure.
It does seem like some of that stuff does run in families.
Yeah. And so there's a question of, I mean, I'm kind of talking about the same things we always talk about, but just that whole theme of whether or not David can be okay or not is running through this. And now we have all these new additions to his past that make you question. I mean, God, it just feels like this poor guy has no agency, that he's got so many influences. His mom was mentally unstable. His father has this power that he's inherited, that absolute power corrupts absolutely. He had the Shadow King in there fucking with him. It's weird to say with a guy that's so powerful, but it feels like he has the deck stacked against him. And
yeah,
so
he never had a chance at all.
If he can overcome that. And I really was moved by all the, his mom telling him a few times as a baby, I love you, my beautiful boy." And especially when he talked to himself, he's all, "Hey, you little baby, me, so small, so happy. Is your mom being good? Do you feel loved? Something scary is coming. Don't worry, I'm here, I'll protect you." That's kind of like what I was talking about last week about nurturing your inner child, except he's just talking to his actual self as a child, and I thought that was really sweet. But there's still this open question of what the rest of his childhood is like. Anyway, what?
I get absorbed when he starts, because I start thinking like, what does it mean to feel loved? What does it feel like? Do I feel loved? What is that? You know, it's like I start going down these like you know, like these corridors in my mind.
Sure.
I was curious because you opened up this thing about like that something in this episode made you think that there's a glimmer for hope of David having a happy ending, and I'm curious of what are you hanging your hope hat on here, Jason?
Just the fact that they're bringing in the question or the idea that there are possibilities. That quote to me, every man is born as many men and dies as a single one, is sort of indicating that until he's dead, he could be a bunch of different things. Mm. That's it. And if it was fated that he was going to be a villain, then that would... Well, it still might be, though. I mean, I actually do think that's where this is going, and but I think that Howley is trying to have it be a question, and so that might either be just to give us false hope, or it might be to give us actual hope. I don't know. But I don't think they want us to think that he's fated for sure to be a villain. Even though I kind of do. I realize I'm all over the place. I kind of hope he's not at this point, but...
No, it's a mark of a good story that they can have you kind of hopping on those two opinions. And you know, having a... Doing something... Doing it... Honestly, it wouldn't be a bad idea. I'm not saying that's what we're going to do, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to show in a realistic and empathetic way how a person could move forward from mistakes this big.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I feel like if I look at the landscape and I look at the, you know, the post Me Too world we're living in or dealing with, you see a lot of people that have done a lot of things they probably feel bad about and regretting now, and they can't talk about it because if they did, they're admitting to being monsters. And how do you move forward? How do you get closure? How do you both respect victims and also people who might have inadvertently or they didn't know any better because of their own mental illnesses and the way they were raised and the place that they grew up in do these things.
Mm-hmm. Or even if they just pure and simple fucked up and then decided, that's not who I want to be. How do I change myself?
Like, genuinely remorseful about it.
How do I go forward and sin no more? You know, it'd be interesting to see, like, have a path in some kind of fictional setting where people could be, okay, let's try this on. How do we? What do we think? What does this side say? What does this side say? I mean, fiction is how we kind of that's the laboratory where we work out a lot of ethics and morals. There's interesting. God, was it Revisionist History, or was it? No, it was an episode of Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, where he was had this hypothesis, and he might have gotten it from someplace else that like. It was during a series of public executions. He like did a analysis of like historically how humans have seen public executions and capital punishment versus how we see it today. And he cites as one of the things that really changed people's minds about stuff is popular literature like Charles Dickens. And how he would show like, you know, what is it like to be poor in London, and what are the pressures that people face, and are these actually just wicked people? Are these like, you know, there's this complexities and shades of gray, and do we feel good about seeing a poor kid who might have mental illnesses get hung, strung up, and we're you know popping popcorn and bringing a whole family out? Like, you know, this literature and fiction and art might be the thing that saves civilization, is all I'm saying. And you know, I applaud people that use these art forms to ask like big questions and like posit big solutions and things like that. And maybe they'll go down that path in Legion.
Maybe so. It would be a brave move, but I think if anyone could pull it off, it might be Noah Hawley.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally agree with everything you said about what literature can do. Like, even just as simple as Will and Grace prominently featuring gay characters, I feel like changed American attitudes about homosexuality.
Yeah, it's all about humanization and empathization. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, put yourself in the other person's shoes and really imagine what life is like for that. And then in so many things in life, the answer is like, why are this person acting this way? Or why are they screaming out in the street? Or why is this person on my YouTube saying this or that?
Yeah.
It's all explained just by like, imagine you are them. and you are and you are facing totally. The pressures and that they are facing in life.
Yeah. And the easy thing to do is if you don't understand something and you don't like it, to just paint it as bad or evil. And
right.
there is, like, I agree with the whole thing about empathy being really important. And there's a point where you just can't, even if you understand something, it's not acceptable. But
yes.
that's different than just saying, I don't understand it and I'm not going to try and I hate you.
Yeah, that's the other side, like complete moral relativism. We're like, nothing's good, nothing's bad
right.
from a human perspective. That's the other side of the trap to fall right. into for sure. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're at notes. Rima, you got any notes?
I do, just a couple. One that I wanted to point out that just really, I know will stay with me for quite some time, and that's the image of the face down baby. Did you guys catch that when Gabrielle there towards the end was like kept turning baby David yeah. over, and it was just like just wrong, just all kinds of wrong. I'll never not be able to see that now for quite some time.
Yeah, because you want to see your baby's face, but also it had me feeling like I couldn't breathe. You know?
Yes, I was about to say it felt like suffocating too, because yeah. probably because we're taught, you know, babies shouldn't be put to bed to sleep. You know, you always got to
right.
put the baby in the back,
down,
and
yeah.
it's like any parent that's grown up in the 20 years that's been popular wisdom has probably gone in and like you know turned shifted their and like it does feel like a dream, like it's something you can't wake up from. Like, oh my god, I'm turning and I can't turn and I can't turn and the kid can't breathe and I can't breathe and
yeah,
it's
like
highly effective,
very effective. They do imagery so. Brilliantly in this show for sure, and that was very effective because it was just wrong all around. We had the angriest boy doll. Did you guys see the doll? And
yeah I wanted to talk about
what?
That too.
Yeah So Gabrielle has this doll in like this shoebox looking thing, and her hand is in there. Like, it looks like there's a hole cut out in the side and her hand rests in there with the doll. Where did she get the doll? Is it a Hitler doll? I know she came from the camps. What is this thing? And then, you know, how we see this, because we saw it a lot in season one, right? We saw this representation of the world's angriest boy, you know, play out throughout season one as we're kind of learning a little bit more about David and when he was little, and we saw this all over the place. And then now we're seeing this doll. And I wonder how much this kind of influenced, like, today and what we did see David as an adult as he's exploring his childhood. I mean, did this doll like kind of represent the mental illness being passed down, or did it maybe represent the Shadow King in season one? Like, it was like what he uses is to show his influence, like in the background
yeah,
of things.
I always thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, just because, you know, when you cover a show like professionally on a podcast, it's a lot different than when you're just kind of watching it at home. And
yep.
when I kind of just like took season two off, some of these things in my brain might have gone mushy. But I guess I thought that the world's angriest boy was a reflection of like some of the delusions that the Shadow King had filled David's head with.
I
like
mean
that showed his malign influence. I didn't
yeah.
think it was like a literal doll that he carried around, or am I wrong with that?
Well, I think that's what we thought until
right.
yesterday. And now I think that what we also know the Shadow King does is he takes images that are actually from the person's life and then inhabits them and uses them. So like he did with Lenny. And so I guess, you know, you said Hitler, I hadn't even considered that, but you know, we know she was in the concentration camps. And so maybe it's,
why would she have a little Hitler doll?
Maybe it's her way of this is just total speculation, but it's her way of gaining control over it, you know, like this is my worst enemy and fear represented as a helpless little thing that I can control. I don't know. But then give it to your baby. It was pretty twisted.
Right. That was weird. And I don't know that it yeah. was, but it did. I thought that when we had that representation of the world's angriest boy in season one, I was like, gosh, it kind of looks like a Hitler type, you know,
yeah.
like what they modeled it after. And then seeing the doll, it was like, and then kind of matching up in the time period that we, which I know that they kind of play around with time a little bit. Like, it's always kind of, you know, you don't quite know where you are in time, in the sets and the clothes and cars and things. But I feel like they kind of established a pretty good timeline here when we're talking about World War II and the camps. And when I hear that, I think of Hitler, and then I think see this doll, and that's where my mind went. I don't know for sure that that's what it is, but it sure looks like it.
I'm going to say it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the other thing is, like, are we not, are we quick to dismiss the, are we, why are we insisting that this is a real thing just because we saw it? Because
it
we also
be,
know
yeah.
it these, was there a picture of, like, Charles and Gabrielle and David together with the World's Angriest Boy, or is the World's Angriest Boy crop up when Charles went on his sabbatical to go find Farouk? Because if it's the latter, I'm a,
he opened the box. Wasn't he the one who opened the box?
He was,
and
the,
saw
when they
her
were in the mental
gripping
institution,
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
She was still kind of in the catatonic state. Yeah. It was in that shoebox, and he lifts it, and then she, then he catches her staring at him, which before she just seemed kind of glazed, and that's when it kind of, you know, like startles him, like, oh, she's watching me.
And the world's angriest boy in the world does sound like Hitler. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not, but now that you said that, and it looks kind of like Hitler, and she's in the concentration camps, it makes me feel like there could be something there.
Maybe, but... That's all the notes that I had.
Okay, Aaron?
I want to talk about missing teeth.
Oh, I was hoping to, like, not go there.
I don't like that.
I had mentioned last episode how I was trying to figure out what... Because I had a theory that, like, maybe she was a double secret time-twisting agent and that she was leaving a tooth behind as some kind of breadcrumb. It does seem now that the teeth are... a sign of, like, time stress.
Mm-hmm. It's a price she's paying,
a toll,
and a sacrifice.
Price, yeah.
Yeah, a physical price she's paying. So I'm off the missing tooth as breadcrumb, and I'm wondering, because the other thing is, obviously Switch is exhausted. Her battery is run dry by the end of this episode, and David has not got even a little bit of sympathy for that. Mm-mm. And I wonder if it's going to lead to, like, David assuming direct control over her and forcing her mind to overcome these body. And, like, with as twisted as this show can get, I'm just like, what is Switch going to look like? Like, you know, is she going to look like a Theon Greyjoy, or is she going to be like Rickety Cricket from Always Sunny? Like, every episode we see, she's missing more teeth, her face is more lined and haggard, or her hair's starting to fall out. Like, what kind of physical toll is she going to pay by the end if we're three episodes into it and she's down two teeth?
Do you think that time travel is going to keep being a part of it throughout?
Well, I mean... yes, because why would David give up?
Yeah, I think it probably will too. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's getting pressure from both ends. He's got Division 3 trying to hunt him down. He's got to use time travel to stay one step ahead of that. And every spare moment he's not doing that, he's got to go back in time to try to fix it. Because there's also a clock on this. I don't know why, but he keeps on. There's a couple times in an episode where he's like, "We're running out of time," and I don't know if that's like this particular session until we have to go back, or like just in general until Division 3 tracks us down. I'm not sure, because it's a funny thing, and it's a very Legion thing for a guy who has time at his in his mastery now to say we're running out of it, right? That's like the Federal Reserve saying we're running out of money. Like, what the hell does that even mean? So
one of those time travel rules or whatever it was, that like self-help thing that she was listening to, said something about not going back into the same point too much or it'll mess up the time stream or something like that. But I don't know if David would care about that really.
No, I think he doesn't give a shit about anything except for gratifying his own
absolutely.
Needs.
I know. Like, as much as I'm saying I hope that David comes around, right now I think he's completely, he's rationalizing everything. He's not taking any responsibility, and he's just trying to erase his deeds without understanding that it's also his mindset that's a problem and everything like that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Let's see. I think that's it. Because I had the world's angriest boy to talk about, but we already covered that. So what you got, Jason?
Well, I did want to talk about the time frame a little bit, because the look of this hospital made me start. I know we've talked about it earlier on the podcast, but not recently. And this hospital looked like it came out of the 40s or 50s. They're talking about the war. He hasn't had cherry pie since before the war. And then we see they were both involved in it. And I was thinking, okay, then if current day for Legion is our current day, that would make David at least like 55 or 60 years old or older. So that's not right. But you know, my go-to with this show is usually, well, it's kind of like a fable and nothing is strict, mm-hmm. and you're not really supposed to worry about that. It's just supposed to indicate, okay, this was a long time ago. But I did start to think maybe current day Legion is in the 70s. And it, in fact, I read something where Melanie said about Summerland that her husband inherited the place in the 40s and he built this place with Carrie 30 years ago. So it actually could maybe be in the 70s. Now, I didn't, like, there's probably people using cell phones throughout that I don't remember or whatever. So I don't know, but it could be in the 70s. I mean, there was actually a scene with people using cell phones, but that was that I remember, but that was when John Hamm was doing one of his speeches about, I forget what it was, but that whole thing is, I feel like, could be considered outside the reality of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's I'm kind of with you, because like I saw some people writing articles being like, "Aha! Now we know the timeline." I'm like, I mean, certainly the stuff with Xavier about the war and it lines up, but and it's also I just wonder. Is this something that Holly backed into when he realized maybe he could tell a little bit more of Charles' story than he wanted to? Because I'd always assumed that he was going for this kind of aesthetic because it was just a deliberate choice. You know, it's just like, hey, I'm going to make something that feels timeless. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to set it in this kind of like steampunk 70s spy chic kind of aesthetic, and then it allowed him to be like, oh no, actually this is taking place in 1973.
I mean, we also see like Carrie, he's Mr. Inventor, but all his inventions look really old. Like he's got this switchboard when David's sitting in that bathtub and you have to plug the cables into the right places.
The technology, you know? So, always looks a little dated.
I wonder. But yeah, I think ultimately we're not supposed to really try to pin it down too much. And then the other thing I had was about the teeth. So we talked about that. I guess that's it. We will take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us. Back, it's time for the news.
Okay, a couple items this week. First one we have is from Collider.com. So these are a few highlights from an interview with executive producer Lauren Shuler Donner and executive producer / director John Cameron, who was the director of this particular episode. First question is, in this third season, given that you have the opportunity to bring everything some closure, what did you need to do as producers to support showrunner Noah Hawley and get him to the point that he envisioned? John Cameron says he's very self-sufficient as a creator and writer, so our role is to support that, to read what he writes, to give him honest feedback, and to give him reactions, at least from my point of view, as a viewer as well as a producer, in regard to, does it make sense to me, in terms of the show that I've seen and that I enjoy, and does it clarify or bring to a conclusion all of the various storylines that have been seeded throughout the first two seasons. It's really just an honest reaction to his work. That's the most valuable thing for him in my regard. The production side is a whole different issue, which runs like clockwork. But I try to respond as a viewer and a fan of the show would. And Lauren Shuler Donner says, as a producer on the production side, it's getting that vision to the screen and working with each director. We have a different director for each episode, except for John, who directed two of them. So it's about getting what Noah wants and his vision onto the screen with each director's take on it without taking away from what we know Noah's intention is. Next question, because this is such a complex story that's told in such a complex way, would it have been impossible to keep going for more seasons? Shuler Donner says, I don't know. Noah had the desire to make it a 3-season arc. Could he have kept on going and kept it compelling? Absolutely. Noah can do anything. Cameron says, or could there be another 3-season arc? It's theoretic, but sure. It's so fertile, and the mythos is such a tapestry of different stories and different characters that I think it's eternal in a certain way. Certainly the comics have done it for decades, and I think television and film can do it as well. Next question. When it comes to introducing Switch this season, have you guys had to come up with rules for time travel? Cameron says, yeah, Switch is completely innovative and interesting. She's an enigma. We don't really know what she's about and why she's here, but we'll find out. We tackle the travel rules and the astral plane rules script by script. That's part of the process of, can they do that? How did we get there? And then sometimes we have to look back and go, when this happens, this has to happen. It's a continually evolving approach to our internal story logic. Calling it logic is pushing it. Shuler Donner, we try to do it with the time travel. She goes through doors, so we have a hall of doors. At a certain point, we decided to define it so that each door was a different time, whether it's 20 minutes in the past, 1 hour in the past, 1 day, or 1 month. That helps define that device for the audience.
I wonder if they went down this, like, in like what would the experience of we as a viewer went on with them? What would it be like to watch them go back in 30 years?
Yeah. It's because, like, a day-long jog.
Maybe more. Like, if the things come in, like, you know, what was it? Like, 1 hour or a minute? Was it minute intervals? Or does it... Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It might, like, but the intervals get larger.
Right.
As you go back. I don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's just a construct for our feeble three-dimensional minds to understand time travel. So, like, it actually might be some kind of, like, staring into some kind of black hole, but... This is how the camera caught it.
Aaron just about slipped in it and admitted he has a four-dimensional mind there, but...
Well, I was actually debating, like, we are four-dimensional creatures, right? Because we That's exist true. In both time and space, but I got caught up in my own bullshit.
Sometimes As one does.
Speaking of Holly doing more seasons, well, we know he's not going to. We know Fargo 4 is coming, right? Next
yes,
year?
Yes, still, it's still out there,
Do you know
there,
anything
yeah,
about that? Still... Like, who's in it?
I know Chris Rock is in it. That's all that I know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's another big name announced with it, but I have that's the one I thought of too, Rima, so I don't know.
I haven't. I mean, they might have been out there. I do try to keep up on notifications with Noah Hawley and his projects, but that's really the last one that I've seen. If there's been anything else since then, I'm out of the loop at the moment, but I haven't seen anything lately. I just know they have to keep pushing it because of the movie he's doing, trying to get Legion wrapped up. And then hopefully he can then, after since
jump
this is over
Fargo.
Now, yeah, go jump back into that project and get it moving.
Cool.
We have one more quick item from the wrap. This is with an interview with Noah Hawley. So Legion creator and showrunner Noah Hawley said that even though Dark Phoenix was coming out a month before, he didn't have to cut through any corporate red tape with 20th Century Fox to use Xavier. He says, we're going to have to meet David's parents eventually. Nobody fought us on it. There was a question, obviously, about what age is he? What's the model? Is he the McAvoy age? Is he Patrick Stewart's age? Should we try to get either of those actors to do it? He explains. Ultimately, I felt like we established our own alternate reality here on Legion, where it's both 1964 and the future. I think I felt like the younger Xavier was actually more consistent with the timeline. But there's something about David. If David meets his father, and his father is his age, I think there's something interesting about that. I always think that he, however strong his powers at that age were expressing themselves, but they were something that he wanted to do some good. And I think that Gabrielle allows him to do that. I think that he used it, the mind, to kill the enemy soldier. I think it opened himself up and he became scared of it. I don't think anyone would know what happened in that tunnel besides you. Part of me wonders if he committed himself or if he allowed himself to be brought there because he kind of has become lost. He also adds, the story from the comic is that he met Gabrielle in an institution and helped her get out of a catatonic state, and it was interesting to the degrees that it paralleled David and Sid's story, and I wanted to look at that.
Good job.
Yeah, you did good. That's all I got.
It's my understanding, I don't know if you saw this too, Jason, because I didn't remember any of this backstory. I don't know if it's because I just missed those plot lines, but that, do you know who else he ran into at that Israeli Holocaust survivor rehabilitation clinic?
In the comics?
Yes.
Storm? No.
One Eric Linshear, better known as Magneto.
Magneto. Oh, I didn't.
And I got a little thrill of excitement when he was talking to that doctor that maybe that they were going to do some hint, but then they actually explicitly identified him as somebody else. So now that you're telling me that there's more Professor X to come, I wonder if there will be any kind of like, I'm going to be on the lookout, because I also thought the Cerebro helmet was very, had a little bit of the shadow of the Magneto helmet.
Yeah.
Which makes sense in the comic timeline because they worked together to build that first one.
Mm-hmm.
But
interesting. I mean, I feel like a Howley really has a focus, so I would be surprised to see that. But
it's
possible.
Fun because I feel like he sometimes tries to do a nod to things. So yeah. I don't know. You never know what he might do.
Yeah, I'm not expecting this. I'm expecting like a season one type of like oblique reference to Charles X the same way.
I mean,
like an Easter egg.
The thing about this series that I was looking forward to that I didn't get, and so I'm a little disappointed, even though I love the show, is what Legion is all about. And I just was reminded of this when I was looking at his Wikipedia entry, is there was some kind of terrorist attack and an explosion and terrorists died and their psyches got absorbed into David. Mm-hmm. And then he had them as multiple personalities. And I think each one of them had a different power. And so sometimes he was really evil because each one of the personalities would sometimes be in control, like, you know, your stereotypical multiple personality story, which is probably why Noah Hawley didn't do it, because it's too stereotypical. But that's why he's called Legion, because he has this legion of different personalities inside of him. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why I'm bringing that up is because Hawley will just make this story what he wants it to be to tell his story and not adhere to the comics when he doesn't think it's interesting or useful, you know?
I think in a way he's going about exploring the, you know, it's just multiple personalities in a different way, and that's just David's own personalities. And we're definitely getting a bigger.
He's always
taste
talking
of
to himself.
Here.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and well, in this season, they're talking back, like they're all communicating, and we see them in kind of a physical form, like when he's getting ready to serve tea to Switch, and you know, he's constantly kind of arguing with the different versions of himself, and you know, it's like the angel over here and the devil over here.
I just remember in the comics, you would see him as a totally evil person. You know, because one of those bad guy personalities would come to the fore. Okay, we better get going. Let's move on to mental notes, our listener responses.
First one from Daniel Lee. Hey, Jason, Rima, and Aaron. Longtime listener, first time emailer here. Well, thank you. Welcome. Wow, what an hour of television. I was so pleasantly surprised to see that Stephanie Corneliuson, who was tremendous on Mr. Robot, was portraying Gabrielle, and she did not disappoint. It was such a beautifully tragic episode, even though we knew from the start how it would end, that sense of inevitability only added to the sense of foreboding that built up throughout. I knew pretty early on that David would be the one to cause Gabrielle to revert to her broken catatonic state and thereby cause his own doom, but the way it was revealed was so heartbreaking. From her internal musings, wondering if she'd ever left the mental hospital, to the moment we see the letter she's been writing to Charles is just a zigzag line, I was completely shattered. As for the broader plot implications, the parallel of David and Sid to Charles and Gabrielle does give me a modicum of hope that David can be redeemed. While his rape of Sid is still unforgivable, we, and most importantly David, get to see how differently Charles uses and views his powers. Charles knows how invasive his telepathy can be and opposes rules on himself to that end. Perhaps, although I do think it's unlikely, David will eventually realize that he's not helping people at all, and the way he's abused his powers has only ended up hurting the ones he loves the most, including himself and his own mother. Side note, his monologue to his baby self is one of the most crushing moments in an episode filled with him. Also, I wasn't totally on the Farouk is manipulating Division 3 train until this episode, but this sealed it for me. It's a great reminder that this guy has been, as Charles describes him, the devil from the absolute start. Keep up the amazing work, Dan. P.S. What on earth made Charles and Gabrielle think that doll was a good comfort toy for a child?
No clue.
It really worked for Gabrielle. It worked so well it put her into a coma.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just, you raise your kids the way you're raised.
It's good enough for me. It's good enough for you.
Yeah.
That's right. Pass on the trauma.
Why on earth would anyone think that beating a child with a belt would be a good thing to do? And yet,
it happens.
Okay, this one's from Jamie Henry. Hello again. So let me see if I have this right. David, with the help of Switch, went full Bran Stark and pulled a Hodor on his mom. And by doing this, Charles was distracted long enough that the Shadow King could move in and possess David's infant self. So David was always going to be infected by the Shadow King because he always interfered at that moment. Yeah, this is why messing with time is not a good idea. Now my brain hurts. Costuming observation, David's mom was always wearing different shades of green when she was in the house with Charles. In the mental hospital and right at the end, when David hodored her brain, she was wearing white. I have no idea if that means anything, but it was something I noticed. Peace and love, Jamie H. You know, they do a lot with color and costumes and for characters specifically a lot. Like Sid always, and I guess this season it's more black, but she always wore orange. In seasons one and two. So it seems like characters do kind of have a theme of colors. I don't know if it means anything with this one, but I don't think it hurts to point it out.
Interesting. Yeah, she's wearing black and her future self wore black. So she's heading towards that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
I forgot to mention, too, his mom is Gabrielle Haller and he's David Haller. So maybe that means that they end up passing him off to her relatives, maybe her brother or something.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to mention that earlier, but I hate to refer too much to the comics because I know that Noah Hawley kind of does his own thing and he doesn't really use it too heavily for reference. But and they didn't say her name. Or did they? But I know she's not credited. She's just credited as Gabrielle.
Oh, yeah.
But her
she's
name,
just Gabrielle, but it's Haller
in the comics. Yeah, but it's Gabrielle Haller in the comics. And then he's David Haller. And if he, but if, and then his sister Amy is Amy Haller. Now,
that's
how
why
are they
I think,
all,
yeah, it's her brother, maybe.
But they said the mental institution that she didn't have any family.
Good point. I'm done with this show.
That's it. Scrap it all.
I don't know.
Hodor.
Maybe we'll find Hodor.
Hodor. Good job.
Okay. We have one call this week, and it's from Steve Brown.
Hello, Jason and Rima. This is Steve, and this is for Legion Chapter 20, the one with Charles and Gabriella. Really good episode, and I can't wait to hear what you guys thought, because there's so much going on here, even though we have kind of a bottle episode where we only have basically our four or five characters. But I really like that they use the same song when they leave the mental institution. It's the same song that we have for David and Sid. The She Comes in Colors from Rainbows, something, Rolling Stones. Anyway, and I really liked that they met in a mental institution. That the irony there seems really good. And it's too bad that David wasn't able to stop Farouk from entering his younger self. I would have been interested to see how that would have worked out. And it was also, there was a moment there where I almost thought that David was going to be the one who drove himself crazy, like from the past. Like it was not Farouk that drove him crazy, but it was his self. And it seemed to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounded like she was the one that had the mental illness and passed it on to him, and Charles passed on his telekinesis telepathy to David. So he basically got both of the positive and negative from his parents. I can't wait to watch it again and can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Yeah, we didn't really mention that much that he actually totally failed. And it might, just mean that it was always going to be that way.
Well, I think also that this is not really driving the plot forward. This is just, this was like painting an emotional palette that then, you know, Haller can then spend 5 minutes. Because like the thing is like David goes back in time and either he stops the Shadow King or he doesn't. And then that's not particularly interesting. What's interesting is what comes next, right? If he stops the Shadow King, what does the world look like? I actually am hoping that he stops the Shadow King so we can see David's quote unquote perfect world and how screwed up it's going to be, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious to see that happen. But I thought this, like, you know, that's why I said it's kind of surprised me it took a whole episode to do this. But I kind of feel like that he's going to take these concepts he set up and riff on them several times in the next few episodes as we see David try to do this and David try to do that. So I think it's also Steve's point. I think it could be all of those things. Like, it's true that he got mental illness from his mother. It's true that he got telepathy from his father. It's true that Shadow King took whatever base was there and then twisted it. And then he also looked like he had some bad experiences growing up with his adopted family. And, you know, like, I entirely believe it's possible you can have the gene for, like, bipolar, but because you have a great upbringing and a support system mm-hmm. that never fully manifests itself.
So it's that Heidegger quote.
Yeah. Like, so there's things that can pour gas on a fire and there's things that can snuff a fire out. And I'm not a psychologist. I don't have any informed basis for this. It's just, you know, it's something I think that maybe they're trying to suggest. So
yeah,
that's what my thought was.
Please, yep. All the listeners, don't make any decisions regarding your mental health based on anything we say. Ever.
No.
consult your mental health professional before going back in time to stop a malevolent being from hijacking your body.
Please that consult a professional.
All right, that's our show, episode 21. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Aaron and Rima.
Thanks.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email or send a voice message like Steve did to us at legion@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out our many other great shows at baldmove.com and podcastica.com.
Which show on baldmove.com right now are you like the most, would you like to promote the most?
Well, I just marathoned Stranger Things and finished it today. So we got full coverage of Stranger Things 3.
Wow.
And I'm excited because Cecily and I are starting coverage for season 3 of Hulu's Harlots. The show, it premieres tomorrow night, Wednesday, or I guess it's Hulu, so it just premieres Wednesday. And we're going to be talking about that on our Bald Move Television podcast. I love Harlots.
I've wanted to watch that. I've heard good things.
It is, Rima, it is a lot of fun.
Oh, good.
It is, also, for for all women watching it, there is just so much rape. Because the plot is, 18th century body houses.
Okay.
And the women that run them and the men that frequent them. And there's just a lot of sexual assault and rape. But it's definitely for a woman's perspective type of television. So that just usually sets up epic revenge plots. And these women are tough and strong. And there's one of my favorite characters looks like she's literally a character from Bloodborne. It's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to covering it.
Awesome. Well, I think that's What's the hot show?
Yeah, I think that you have to have that kind of warning because it's a lot. What's the hot stuff on Podcastica right now?
Rima?
Oh, well, we are also covering Stranger Things on our Strange Indeed podcast right now and having so much fun with that. Now, we do a week by week. We only watch week by week, so I am only on episode 2. That's what we're podcasting on later tonight. So I have not binged it. That's what we choose to do. But
for people who have self-control, go to Podcastica.
Yeah. For people who like to gorge themselves.
Well, listen, we are in the minority with that. Believe me, yeah. There aren't very many people that follow along with
this. I already
binged
the whole thing myself.
Yeah, most folks are binging, and what they'll do is they'll binge it all, then they'll go back and they'll like rewatch it and then do our like follow along our podcast, but they can't help themselves, and that's perfectly fine. I'm like, you guys do you. That's perfectly fine. This is just what we've chosen to do because we're not able to just like binge it and then push out a whole bunch of that. Just doesn't work for our schedule, unfortunately.
Sure.
I wish we could, but we're just not able to do that, so we decided to do week by week. But we're having a great time with it. I think it is a fabulous season so far. Loving it.
I do wish Netflix would not like would on their new shows would release them like week by week, or maybe one or two a week, something.
Yeah, like Hulu does.
That's kind of a blended model.
Yeah.
And because I think it hurts themselves because it destroys the water cooler talk. Like instead of Stranger Things hanging around for the rest of summer and we're talking about it all the way up into September and everybody's, you know, like it gets talked about for a week or two and then it's kind of gone. We've tried so many different formats to cover Netflix shows, and it's just really difficult because everyone watches it differently and everyone's at different places, and you just try to cater to the audience to cater to, and we're catering to the gluttons.
Yep.
My favorite show right now is this one, And yesterday I covered probably the worst episode of any show I've ever covered since I started podcasting. But we had fun podcasting about it because we got to fucking thrash it. That was fun.
You're a hater, Jason. Let it flow through.
Turn to the dark side.
No, it felt good. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Hodor.
See ya.